Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Following On podcast from TalkSport. I'm John Norman. Alongside me, Steve Harmison. At the end of day two, another soggy affair. Pakistan 223-9 at stumps. Mohammad Rizwan 60 not out. Nasim Shah with him as well. England taking a couple of early wickets in the play that was allowed, but ninth wicket partnership between Mohammad Rizwan and also Mohammad Abbas has just taken Pakistan to a position where they may feel that that first innings score is competitive. We shall see. OK, Harmy, well, we didn't have a great amount of play on day two in Southampton. And to be honest, much of the play followed what we saw on day one. Bats absolutely dominating ball, weather winning throughout. Very difficult for Pakistan's batsmen. Although Mohammad Rizwan right at the end, just bringing Pakistan possibly to a score that, if the weather relents, might be competitive. But let's put aside the England-Pakistan series because something else came out today, and that was the announcement that Australia will be visiting in September. Three ODIs, three T20s. They've assembled a huge squad. We know why. They're going to have to be undertaking plenty of quarantine. But it also means that the original schedule or fixture list for the summer will be completed. So that's a hugely beneficial for England and great relief. But any excuse really to talk about the Aussies and and yourself really, because I thought I'm going to fire a few questions at you and just see, looking back at your epic tussles against them, just to see, you know, some of the individuals and big names that you came up against, maybe in ways that maybe the listeners are a little less familiar with. So, well, let's start off with an easy one first. Who was the best Australian batsman consistently that you ever bowled against and why?
I think the best player I've ever played against was Ricky Ponting. Harder to play in Australia on a bounty pitch, which sounds ridiculous. Ricky Ponting being about 5'9" and Steve Harmison 6'5", you'd think the bounty pitches would suit me more again, but you just, the margin for error in Australia for Ricky was just, it was so small because you could slightly overpitch from a good length and he hit it back past your sort of right hand, hit it either sort of through sort of mid off or mid on, or you know, mid, sort of straight mid wicket. And you think, right, I just need to drop it back a length, drop your length back a touch. And you're talking small margins, but that little sort of bring back of length. And you went over, you're on over the top of square leg for six, and that little sort of pick-up pull he's got. So it was difficult to bowl to Ricky. He enjoyed the challenge, and he took the challenge on. Why he's the best player I've ever played against? Because in the time I played, and there's been a lot of talk recently about bowling attacks, and is this the best England bowling attack that's playing now currently? You know, and I'm not a big one for comparing when you go back to the sort of the 05, that 2000 to 2005 brigade, and then the ones before that. I just look at the players that I played against, the likes of Tendulkar, the likes of, you know, Dravid, Lara, you know, Callis, you know, Graham Smith, Stephen Fleming, all these top players. I don't see that now. I think I don't see that as much now from a batsman point of view. But the names I've just mentioned, the greats of the game, I felt with a short ball I could intimidate, I could get at. I couldn't with Ricky. He just smacked it. He absolutely smashed it. It was his release shot. And that's why I found it hard to bowl at him. And he was probably the best player I ever played against. So from an Australian point of view, you know, common sense will tell you, if he's the best player you've ever played against, he's the best Australian.
Who was the mouthiest Australian you ever played against?
It has to be Shane. It has to be Warney. I felt, if I was at the non-strikers end, Shane Warne was just complete and utter, and I'll put it in Richie Beno's terms when he says, this is theatre. Shane Warne was theatre every single time he got the ball in his hand. There was something happening with Shane. Whether he was talking to Adam Gilchrist about the batsman who was facing him, and there's a lot of talk about sledging. And it wasn't so much sledging. You know, it was gamesmanship. You know, Shane Warne would talk about Ian Bell and asking Adam Gilchrist, I think Ian Bell's moving his foot too far onto off stump. I'm not sure Ian Bell's picking the straight one. I'm not sure, you know, Andrew Strauss is picking the one, the big leg spinner. All that while Andrew Strauss, Ian Bell, or whoever's standing, literally between him and the bloke he's having the conversation with. That's gamesmanship. That's brilliant. But that's banter. It's, as Richie would say, it's theatre. And I found myself at the non-strikers end watching one. I found myself watching Shane, and that's testament to who he is. I've not met many people in the sporting world where there's an aura about them. Whenever they walk in, or whenever they walk around, or whenever you look around them, there's this bubble around them of aura of greatness. And Shane was like that. And he was, you know, he'd give himself, you know, he built himself up. But I've also heard and seen and spoke to Shane that he needed to do that to get himself into the battle. He needed to get that. So when you're talking about that sort of stuff, I think it had to be Warne. A lot of them had things to say and jabbered away. McGrath had a go at himself more than anything else. And stand there in between sort of, you know, you're sort of 22 yards away from your partner, and Glenn McGrath's bowled a ball and he's 10 yards in between you both. And he's having a go at himself, which looks on TV, he's having a go at the batsman. He's not. He's having a go at himself for bowling the wrong line and the wrong length, which didn't normally happen, to be fair. But he still was having a go at himself, trying to bowl at a tail ender. But now Warne was the man. He was the king of it. And it wasn't sort of sledging. It was just good gamesmanship. And I thought he was the best at it.
Which Australian top six batsman did you feel you could get out easier than any other?
I had a good time against Michael Clarke. I felt as though I could get at Michael Clarke more from, I know the slower ball gets a lot of headlines, but more from the one that I used to have a ball that used to come back in, and I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know I was doing it. And it was just, I didn't quite get my wrist right, ball going onto off stump. And it didn't quite get right. It would just angle in towards sort of middle in leg. And there was a lot of talk about trying to bowl short at Michael Clarke. And the one that was pushed up there, whether I wouldn't say it was on purpose, but it was something that just happened quite a bit. That became successful against Michael Clarke and getting him LBW. But Clarke was somebody who I think I got more than anybody else from an Australian point of view. I used to get Michael Clarke at the end of the day quite a bit. I got him at Trent Bridge. I got him at the end of the day at Edgbaston. And I think I think it was at Lords. I think it was at the end of one of the sessions at the end of the day. So I think he was somebody who I didn't just enjoy bowling at. He was just somebody I got out quite a bit.
And the reverse, which Australian top six batsman did you struggle against the most? Was there anyone that you never got out?
I think Ricky was the one I struggled at, but I always felt as I had a chance because he took the short ball on. Not really. I wouldn't say I had a plan to each one. And probably the one that you think was the one that was a real sleepless nights over was trying to get Gilchrist out, trying to get Adam out, to get Adam out when you were tired. How do we get him out when you're tired? Because more often than not many times you got Adam Gilchrist when you were fresh. If you got them first thing in the second morning, you'd still bowl 20-odd overs the day before, so you weren't sort of fresh. You could get them with a new ball, but sometimes I thought bowling to Adam Gilchrist with a brand new ball wasn't the greatest thing to do, I mean second new ball, because more often than not, he came in against a second new ball. When you look at it in the grand scheme of things, he opened a batting against a white brand new ball and he smashed it everywhere. It was his chance to score. So probably Gilchrist was the one that you think, right, had more sleepless nights out of anything, because you had a plan to the top six and you hope you got them in, especially in England with a moving ball, because the Duke ball was moving quite a bit over the course of sort of 40, 50, 60 overs. But boy, when he came in at Perth, in that famous game when I felt as though my figures were going all right at the time. I think I had about four for 40, four for 50 in the 2006-07 series. And he came in and he got that fastest 100 and he smashed it everywhere. I didn't get as much tap as someone like Monty, but I remember having a conversation with Monty as I was running in from the boundary as he hit him over my head about for the third time. I said to Mont, just bowl darts at him. Just chuck it at his legs and bowl darts at him. And Monty's, he's just thrown up a little bit more. He says, oh, I think I can get him. I think I'm beating him in the flight. And I'm Monty, look at the scoreboard. He's 125 not out. He's hit you for about 9 sixes. And about 7 of them are not sixes, they're eights. Just bowl darts. Anyway, Monty, yeah, I thought the better. Chucked it up in the air and this thing went about 15 rows back over the top of my head. So when you're talking about sleepless nights, probably Adam Gilchrist was the one.
I was there for that. I was actually fell asleep during the first part of that innings and then was woken up by the sound of the crowd going crazy, because most of those sixes were actually disappearing into the Barmy Army zone. OK, what about underrated Aussies then? In and around the county game as much as the ones you played internationally, who was the players, batsmen or bowlers, or maybe one of each, that in another era, or maybe with a little bit more luck, would have played a lot more Test cricket?
The biggest one's Darren Lehman. I actually think Darren Lehman is the best overseas player to play cricket in my lifetime in England. I think he's the best overseas player to play. The way, you know, for what he did for Yorkshire, I think Darren Lehman, tough to get into that Australia top six. You know, I played against him once and then he got, what did he get? He got a blood clot in his leg, I think, before the Melbourne Test match, Boxing Day in 2002, when Martin Love came in to replace him. And I think that was his chance to get in. I can't remember who was injured. One of the top five was injured and didn't play. But I think Darren Lehman, you can say Stewie Law, you know, Brad Hodge, Martin Love, a lot of these players played and didn't play a great deal of Test match cricket. But for me, I know Darren Lehman probably played more than the sort of three or four names that I've just mentioned all put together. But I think for me, the most underrated Australian who didn't play as much as what he probably could have or he would have if he had been from a different nationality, I think Darren Lehman was I still believe Darren Lehman was the best overseas player in my lifetime to play first-class cricket in England. From a bowling point of view, I'm not sure. Andy Bickle could find himself and lucky that he didn't play as much as he probably did. You had Kasper, Michael Kasparovic, who didn't play a great deal. The big fella Nicholson from Western Australia, he was some bowler when we played against them. I'm trying to think. I've probably missed somebody that's standing out. Arguably the biggest one was the spinner, and that was Stuart McGill. But he was never going to play in front of Shane Warne. And when he did play, he played when, yeah, the Warne, he had that shoulder injury or when he was banned a little bit. But no matter how well he performed, it was naturally he was never going to play after that. So if I'm probably picking two, I would say Stuart McGill with a ball and Darren Lehman with a bat.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Best Australian city for after play drinks.
We loved Adelaide. And I mean, we loved Adelaide. It was, I spent nearly 15 weeks there with the academy. And we had, and it was, it was hilarious. We used to go to Crouch, a guy called Robin Crouch. I think Rob, I'm sure his name was Robin. Robin Crouch. He was Rod Marsh's best mate. We used to go to his on a 7 o'clock every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for a boxing session and, you know, this VersiClimber session, which was basically mountain climbing. But the problem was the Grand at Glenelg opened on the beach. This tiny little bar just sort of opened up at 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon on the beach for live music. And we got stuck into that the majority of the time. Most weeks we were there. And if you did a Monday session with Crouchy and you weren't sick, it took Rod Marsh about 10 weeks to realise that it wasn't for the fact that the session was hard. It was just most of the lads had been on the beer the night before. Because Rod, after about 3 weeks, Rod's gone, "Oh, it's great. Crouchy's pushing his hard. He's a sick every Monday morning." It's like, well, we're not sick on a Wednesday, we're not sick on a Friday. It's got something to do with a Grand on a Sunday afternoon. So we used to have that. But the problem was it was the first floor window, so you were just spewing out the first floor window on the floor. And a great, and sadly he passed away. And he came to the 2005 Ashes, because that academy side was a ridiculous side that we had over there. It was the first intake of the National Academy. Rod Marsh was coach. You know, Flintoff, Key, Strauss, Tremlett. The list is endless of people that played international cricket. I think everybody went on to play international cricket. And it was a brilliant side, but it was some good characters who did enjoy that side of it. And Crouchy was somebody who was, he wasn't bothered. He knew we were all in the ground the night before, or the day before, and the night before. But he pushed you that hard. And his background was, he told a great story. His background was a professional boxer, and he, I think it was one of his first professional fights, he got told, and he didn't have sex for 12 months. Honestly, he was like, gotta do it. I've been told this, that, and he got knocked out in the first round. So he just took the mickey out of some rotten. He was a brilliant character. Sadly he passed away, but it was a session that we all enjoyed going to because we knew we were going to get nailed. We knew it was going to be hard, but it was something that galvanized the group. And the likes of Rod and Nigel Lawton, who was a team manager, John Abrahams, who was the coach, everybody got in and got involved and did it. And if you were sick, if you were struggling, you got helped out. So, you know, Adelaide was my home, to be honest, for I felt every time I went to Adelaide, I felt at home. And it's a city or a place in Australia that if I ever went out there and lived, that would be the only place I'd ever go.
Okay, continuing on that theme, which player did you see drink more beer on the flight from England to Australia or back again than any other? Bearing in mind the old tale about David Boone breaking the record that the Australian Prime Minister had, which isn't true, but I mean, if it went anywhere near what Alan Brazil managed to do when he flew out to Brisbane a few years ago, I'd be impressed.
Well, to be fair, we'd have a good go. No matter whether it was Australia, the West Indies, South Africa, it was like the Last Supper. It was our last drink. You know, from the minute we got to Heathrow, you got in the hotel, signed all the bats, done all the stuff, right, that's it. And that night, you just go through the night, drinking in the hotel bar, get on a plane, have a good drink through the plane, and then get off. And it was like, right, that's it. It's your last drink. That was your last drink until probably the end of the first or the second test match, once everything goes, because you've got to head down, get everything prepared and ready for the... And that was most tours. So it's an even bigger drink when you go to Australia. You got to say Freddie was very good at, you know, good at what he did and what he does. And at the time, he was his, you know, he was at his biggest. He was Andrew Flintoff at his, you know, at his biggest. The 2002 trip was brilliant for the simple fact is we took the 2002-03 trip. I think we took we ended up using about 40 players, but we took about 23 on the trip itself. Goffey went injured. Flintoff went injured. There was somebody else. I can't remember.
Thorpe.
Silverwood came over injured. Tudes came over injured.
Thorpe was injured as well, I think.
Thorpe was going through a bit of a troubled time at home. But the best one was, you know, we talk about professional sport, professional sportsmen. You talk about the drinking culture. It wasn't so much the drinking culture, but that trip out of 16, 17 players. More than half of our team smoked. So we're a lot of smokers. So it wasn't a case of drinking on a plane. When we got to Singapore, it was hilarious. And God rest him, I loved him to bits. He was England's bowling coach on that trip. Graham Dilley, one of the greatest men I've ever met, who sadly passed away as part of Botham's 81 Ashes. But Dill was a chain smoker. So he would sip. And if he'd gone through a full packet of 20 cigarettes, he would have two by his side, so there's 40, and he would buy another one to make sure he always had 60 cigarettes by his side. So literally the plane doors opened into Hong Kong or Singapore, and I mean, it was just a run. It was a sprint, Linford Christie, the whole lot, to these little smoking greenhouses. And as we're coming off, walking by, there's nine England international cricketers and a coach just puffing themselves away. Dill's got about four fags on at the same time. So it was bizarre. You know, my first ever tour, England tour away, when you land in your first port of call and everybody's running off for a fag. So, but yeah, when it comes to that, you know, it was trips like that, playing sometimes an aeroplane made the journey. There's two or three times where we're traveling home after a great The West Indies was probably the best one. We travelled back after the West Indies and, you know, you get a big group and it goes in alphabetical order. And we'd had a day and a half in Barbados before we flew home after the one-day series, and we'd murdered the West Indies, blown them away. So, you know, there was a few of us play golf on the morning of the flight home. But Freddie had gone basically nearly 36 hours without sleeping, and he just kept going and kept going all the way. But the problem was that when we got him on a plane, I remember putting him in a I put him in the wheelchair on that one. It was one of the trips. I put him in the wheelchair, pushed him to the front of the queue because the queue was massive, and all the lads were in the queue, and we just walked past. And by the time we got on the plane, we had our pajamas on, sitting at the bar, just sort of putting fingers up as the lads were coming up. But alphabetical order, innit? Big group. And the problem was, it was Flintoff and Fletcher. And I remember Fletch walking round, because obviously you're in business class, walking round the middle of the island with a ticket and pushing the ticket at me. I'm sitting next to Hoggard and he's gone to me. Right, this is your seat. I went, no, this is my seat, Fletch. And he's gone, no, this is your seat. And I've looked across and there's Freddie sort of half back half of his helmet, because he always carried his helmet on a plane, half of his helmet on, glass of champagne, and he's now sort of at his biggest and best and largest. And Fletcher's gone, you got him in that state, you can have him for the next 9 hours. So that was sometimes a plane journey's going. I end up going sitting next to him. And the only time, I must admit, he fell asleep. And when he fell asleep on the way back from the West Indies, I went to the toilet and slapped him before he went to sleep. And when he woke up, he wasn't too happy. And he made sure that everybody on the plane at that time, around our lot that was asleep, woke up and told him who had slapped him across the face, because he wasn't very happy. So some of the plane journeys are some of the best trips. They are the best team-building atmospheres that you'll ever get, because if you win a game, I always keep saying to young lads, the biggest thing I will say to them, yes, you can be professional. Yes, you can sort of, you've got to do the right thing, and I'm 100% be that. But when you win a game, you celebrate. Whatever, if you don't drink, you still celebrate. You don't have to drink, but you celebrate because you get that winning feeling. And lads that like a drink, or the lads that like to express themselves, express yourself. Because when you're on the field, day four, the game's in a balance, that's what brings you back. And that's what gets you over the line when it comes. So all these little plane journeys coming home when we've won a series, bear in mind, teams don't win away from home. And we had been India and got a good result. We had been to South Africa and won away. We went to West Indies and won away. You know, Pakistan and got a good result in 2000. This is a huge thing to make sure that when the tough times get tough, these are the moments that bring you back. And I think sometimes you can say, well, that's not the right thing to do, but actually it is, because there's a human element of sport and there's a non-human element of sport. And the non-human element, unfortunately, is people outside are watching you perform and expect you to perform at a high level. The human element is you've got to relax and get yourselves away from the game to bring yourselves back into it. And that, for me, sometimes the plane journeys were the best times ever.
Lastly, if you could take one game against Australia over any other, which one would it be?
Oh, that's a great question. That is a great question. I'm probably not going to say Brisbane, because I'd probably say Trent Bridge.
2005.
I'd say Trent Bridge in 2005. Because it'll go down as Freddie's test match, but there was a lot of people did a hell of a lot of hard work to get us in a position to win that test match. You know, Simon went off injured, but bowled brilliantly in the first test match. That was a test match of hard work. Bearing in mind, coming off the back of Old Trafford. Lords was brilliant for me. Yeah, Edgbaston, the end of it, and the greatest test match ever. But I think the Trent Bridge one, going all the way down to the wire, seeing Hoggard and Giles in the middle, the team that had to go out again on the follow-on, basically, obviously, it's not too much 10 men, because Si was with us, really, and go and sort of get us in a winning position to then have Warren Dewey stuff. I think the atmosphere and what it meant, not having won the Ashes for so long, to then get ourselves into a position to get over the line, to be in a touching distance of the Oval of winning the Ashes. I actually think probably that's the best test match victory that I was probably involved in.
Brilliant stuff. Well, Harmy, let's hope for more rain delays tomorrow, okay? And we can do the same thing again. absolutely brilliant. Thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the show. You've been listening to the Following On podcast. We will be back. Better weather forecast, I think, for day three. So a bit more cricket in the now will be brought to you on Acast, Spotify or Apple Podcasts. But thanks for listening to the Following On podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.